From Noble Robot on East Hennepin Avenue in confrontational Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk games and game development. I'm Ellen Burns-Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Mark LaCroix, I too make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with Timothy Staten Davis, lead encounter designer for Brass Lion Entertainment, to discuss combat design. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start. Hi, Tim.
Hey, everybody.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome to the show. We had chatted at GDC this year, and I'm just excited to have you on to be able to talk to you about combat design, because it's something that I'm very interested in.
I mean, he's excited you're here, but he just really wants to talk about combat design.
I'm
about it. It sounds good.
Yeah, cool. Can you introduce yourself a bit for listeners if they maybe haven't heard of the work that you've done?
Yeah, for sure. I'll try to keep it short because I've been in the industry for about 7-ish years at this point. It's been a while, and I've been around to a lot of different studios so far. So I'm Timothy. I'm a cultural technical game designer, as I call myself, and function as a team consultant for teams that are trying to do better work and do it more equitably. And I'm currently at Brass Lion Entertainment as their lead encounter designer, working on their upcoming action RPG that is, as I usually say, like very black. And we have a very majority BIPOC woman, black and brown studio. So we're doing things that are, I think, the first of our kind in the industry, as far as what I can tell from our size as a studio. I'm also the creative director of the Millennium Game Kitchen, which is a co-op studio collective that's focused on creating experiences with a focus around the African diaspora. And we've got a couple of games that we're working on currently, and also doing game jams throughout the year. Recently, one of our games, Clock Out at 2, got featured on Game Devs of Color Expo this past weekend. And so we're promoting that and supporting that at the moment. And then I'm heavily involved in the industry as like our community is concerned. So bringing about more diversity, more voices from the African diaspora perspective, Black perspective into the industry, and getting more of us making games in a higher tier at these studios and making things together. So I've been heavily involved in Black and Gaming's Discord community for the last 3 years, and also do stuff with the local event team out here in LA, and we do events to kind of bring the community together locally as well. And then since I've been in the industry so far, pretty much everywhere I've lived, there's been some degree of community building happening as well in these locations. So that's kind of, you know, what some of that work is. Combat design specifically, to give some more context, I suppose, right? Not my first job as doing encounters or combat work at Brass Lion, which is why I'm at Brass Lion doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. Previous work has included God of War Ragnarok, Avengers, the multiplayer game from Dynamics, where I worked on a lot of the boss fights. And then before that, Halo Infinite, which I worked on their level design team, as well as their single player combat team. And then way, way back, Shadows of War, more so focused on missions, but that was kind of leading into that direction. So that's where we've been so far as the combat arena. Yeah.
Okay. That's a lot of AAA. Well, at least in terms much. Of like the games you're working on. But I mean, a lot of the stuff that you have done since then, especially in terms of like building community and lifting Black voices, is super important. And I wanted to highlight that myself because I think that is very important.
One of the great things about speaking to people who have a lot of different experiences is we tend to focus an episode when we have a guest on usually on one thing.
Right.
But there is no helping other things getting through it and like through the lens of the person that we bring. So I think it's, I think like straying from the topic is
it's
allowed.
It's all part of the same thing. Everything is everything and all that.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Everything is everything.
Everything is everything. We said it again.
They said in a group lament.
Put a coin in the jar.
Yeah.
So, Tim, I want to ask you, what makes for interesting combat I guess what does that even mean, really, to you?
Yeah. That's definitely best explained via some kind of diagram of sorts. But, what's some of the best ways I can put it down, I guess, right? I think one of the key parts is a good relationship. I guess is relationship the right word? I guess a good relationship between the player character and other non-player enemy characters. And when I say relationship, I mean like how those communicate to each other and how they trade between what one person wants to do, what the other person wants to do.
Okay.
And how do you make that feel good, right? I think that's like a key part, is like, you know, some of the power fantasy from the player perspective of like selling, you know, good move sets, good interesting mechanics that you can engage in that, you know, are either going to be focused on making you feel powerful or realistic.
Yeah.
And that your inputs are quick and reflective of what you want to do, and that there is a one of the other key parts is that, you know, if you're looking at a chart from 0 to 100, that there is a skill ceiling, which is a key part of keeping combat interesting, that you have interesting tools to use that you can play around with, and that you can, one of the key parts that we always talk about from combat design is that there is player agency. So you have your tools, and that you can choose how to use your tools, in a way that you like to use those tools. And that's like a personal player preference. So interesting combat is also about player expression.
Okay.
And how does a player express themselves against all these creatures in the world that they're fighting against, bosses, smaller ones, whatever, and that they can feel cool doing it. They can feel that they have a skill and can grow in that skill doing it. And that there is a good trade between what is good and what is bad. You can get better at a certain thing. This also goes straight into the same thing of 1v1 combat for fighting games. It's the same kind of thing, that this person is good at this, this person is good at this, and that there is a balance between I'm going to try this, you're going to try this, and then whichever one of us executes the best or whichever one of us knows our character the best will win, right? So those are just like some of the high level points, and then it kind of gets down into like some of those other smaller things as far as like how to make it feel good and juicy, and it really like that game feel is like the next big part, and the systems behind it all.
I want to ask about the player expression, because I suppose it's variable per game, but like you say, you want to give players tools to play their way. But all those players will ultimately achieve a similar outcome per encounter, perhaps, that may not always be the case. How do you essentially design something when you're kind of designing seven things? If you have a pretty varied moveset and sort of style accommodations.
Yeah. It kind of is interesting because, like, you may have different move sets based on, like, you might have like, you know, three weapons, right, that have a different, you know, series of move sets that they do. One's going to be more focused around stunning creatures or using a certain type of meter that's on the creatures. One's going to be more focused on, you know, doing bleed damage or doing heavy damage on the creatures. And another one is going to be more defensive or something like that, right, using parries or dodges or that kind of thing. You know, obviously you can make all of those things and they'll work out the box, right? But the other mechanics that are at play with the AI are the other key part to make sure that like feels good and that works good, right? When we're talking about a single player game in particular. So I would say that, like, when it comes to that piece, it's more so setting up the mechanics in a way, and like the systems around it all, in a way that like is open enough such that you can make a particular character that is, you know, really big, strong, has a lot of like defense type of such situation, and you can have a particular weapon that is more effective against that character, right? But you know, you say, okay, yeah, like we'll tune for that, right? But otherwise, the other weapons were still useful, but you have to use them in a different way or different, you know, style that would make sense for your playstyle, right? And so you just have to make sure that there's enough mechanics that said, like, okay, this is more favorable, but if the player plays this way or this way or this way, and there's usually only going to be a certain number of just play styles that we'll tune to,
yeah,
to make sure it feels good.
Yeah.
That's the only way we can do it. We can't like do everything. So we tune to certain ones and then we like lean in that direction. Like what you'll see in God of War Ragnarok, for example, and I didn't do a lot of the systems for tuning that stuff, but we tested it, is that all of the RPG parts of it, as far as like your armors and your additional equipment, it is on certain paths that you'll be able to take as a player. And so if you want to take a more aggressive fighting style that has less defense, but if you have good parry timing, you'll be rewarded this play style, and this particular types of weapons may be more fruitful for it. But our thing is that like players should be able to play how they want and should be able to use whichever weapons they want to use. We want to encourage people to learn all the weapons, right? But they can still have a favorite.
Yeah.
And they can still, you know, push their character build into a certain direction that they want for their playstyle. But we want to encourage, you know, them using all of the mechanics as much as possible, okay, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's like, so you built the whole, system as you're supposed to as a game designer. And then right. there's a bunch of scaffolding around these different paths that you can, these different avenues of the system that you've built that you like kind of
right.
can lead players in a direction one way or another.
Right.
That definitely. Because it's one thing to build a system, but if the player doesn't understand all the different possibilities of the system, then it makes it difficult to like play around in right. that space or be able to express yourself.
Yeah, it seems like a challenging thing to balance. Like you have to constantly be kind of checking the temperature on both sides of the pool, if that's an analogy that works.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
It can't be rock, paper, scissors.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's ask the expert.
Yeah, I mean, rock, paper, scissors is like a baseline, mm-hmm. right? It is the baseline,
yeah.
But all the nuance in between that is like the hard part.
Yeah.
You know, like obviously, as I mentioned before, like God of War, like the axe versus the spear, like the axe is more effective on bigger enemies, generally speaking, because mm-hmm. it's stronger, right? So that is like you know your hammer, yeah. In essence, right?
Yeah.
But the spear is also effective, but you have to use it differently sometimes, and it may take longer. It's still rock, paper, scissors in terms of like what is the better tool to use, but you know there's nuance in that. Like, but you can still cross over into the other domain and still progress if you know how to use your tools appropriately.
Right.
So it is that nuance that we have to like add in and tune in that kind of still makes everything feel fair and good.
Yeah.
Even though, but like for a 1v1 fight, for example, rock, paper, scissors, you know, if I go high, you go low, whoever has the longest reach is going to hit.
Yeah.
So that's still, you know, that same kind of dynamic there, right? So it's definitely there.
much more complex, and I would imagine, you know, it takes like 2 seconds to learn rock, paper, scissors, so it's not like that fun of a game, but you know the experience that you were describing of trying to set something up where learning and becoming more skillful with the different tools that players have available to them is really satisfying. So you might go through an area where you get, you know, it's really advantageous to use the spear, but you're really stubborn and you just want to do an axe playthrough where you kill everything with only axes.
Yeah.
You know, so yes. You're going to struggle through that area a little bit more because the spear would have been optimal, but you love your axe and you can do that if you want. It's going to be all right.
Yeah. It's not zero sum.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you talked about the players choose a path and they can optimize what they've already been going for, right? And I think we recognize that in a lot of games is really satisfying. It's like, this is my play style and the game is rewarding me not only through the success I'm having because I'm good at this style, but mechanically I'm pouring upgrades and sort of RPG elements into it. So, but you also do want to encourage people to try other things. So how do you prevent those two things from being cross-purposes from each other? Because you want that reward of getting better at the thing you like, but then you sort of leave behind the other path you didn't take, and the game might want you to give it a try every now and again. Is that not that big a problem?
For a AAA game, it is a big problem.
Yeah.
For the smaller games, it might not be like as big of a deal. But you know, it's like a Monster Hunter, for example, right? Like, it's all about different builds and equipment and upgrading your equipment for the situation, you know. And obviously, there's some players who are like more skilled at a gun build versus, it's like the dual wielding or whatever. Like, there's players that prefer these styles and they'll lean into that. But I think most players in that game in particular were like, yeah, but I also have this one and I have this one if I need it. So there's that bit. I know one of the strategies that we kind of use to kind of play upon, you know, encouraging players to like just have fun and try things out, right? If you make these other tools and you make these other systems, like, you want them to use the systems that you made.
Yeah.
It's like that's why we made them.
Yeah.
And players, we always say it as designers, right? And I'm sure some of y'all know that players will sometimes like take the fun out of the game for themselves.
Yep.
On on accident.
Oh yeah.
I'm thinking about my husband. how does he find min-maxing everything so fun? I don't get it.
Yes, yeah. The min-maxing of it all, right? And it's like a gamer brain, and you know, it's like
yeah.
So we have to fight against it, right? A little bit, and encourage players to like, yes, you can do it, but we also want you to like do other stuff and have fun with the tools and stuff. So some of the tools that we will put in the systems are things that like give rewards to, you know, like, obviously, people who want to platinum the game, they'll get rewards for like using all the weapons, right? For example, or like these different achievements. So that's one thing, right? Other things, like other in-game rewards, are like, okay, you use this weapon, and then you use these tools, and it helps you upgrade this other area, right? Or we give you, we give you a skill path with this other weapon that actually gives you access to this other element. And we have enemies that require that element to be defeated, right? To like get through them faster. So it's like, okay, you need to actually grow this weapon a bit more and get more familiar with it, right? So is putting the other mechanics in there and like some other small systems that say like, yes, you know, you can do this, but also you're going to have to do this eventually.
Yeah, right.
And then the other part too is, you know, for God of War, for example, as one reference, like, you know, like spamming is a thing, obviously, like certain movesets, you know, we see it in fighting games all the time, certain movesets like spam, and they're really, really effective.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything about it. but, you know, when you start adding in experience points and adding in mechanics to level up your character and stuff, then that's when you can do like, oh, actually, we don't reward spamming. We don't reward this kind of thing. Devil May Cry does this really well, and so does Bayonetta and all this stuff. Right. Like, if you do the same combo over and over again, you get less points, right? And they give you extra points to say, like, when you switch combos up, when you do new combos, and when you discover a new combo. So it's those things that, like, you know, motivate players to like try new stuff out and keep that rotation going. So it's that kind of stuff that we have to always pay attention to.
In order to build the system like that, there's so many things going on at any given point. And I imagine it's very difficult to wrap your head around all of those different things as one person. How do you keep those thoughts organized? How do you work with other people to make sure everybody else is on the same track, making sure that every bit of the system, every bit of mechanic, like, all still works together to make a cohesive whole.
It's kind of challenging.
I'd imagine so.
You know, generally speaking, when it comes to like some of the key mechanics, you know what I'm saying? So it's like when we're talking about planning for what the movesets are going to be, or in planning for like the different synergies of the systems, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like synergy, right? There's usually like one main designer that will like do it, that will like hold that and like push it forward, right? Because generally speaking, when you're splitting up the work, right, that means that like you just want to make sure that like someone knows everything.
Yeah.
It's like has access to like, here's how it's supposed to work. And here's how these work. And then the rest of the design team is like obviously gonna like be familiar with it and be able to give input and be able to like test it and, you know, talk about those things. So it is a group effort as like, you know, figuring these things out.
Right.
But in terms of like implementing these things and kind of executing on them, there would generally be like one designer that is holding that vision, pushing it forward, and the other team members will be assisting to, you know, add in those extra details or add in the movesets or and whatnot. So it is that back and forth. But from the other part of it, like keeping it all together in that effort, right, over the course of the game's production timeline. Spreadsheets are a thing.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Spreadsheets are a thing. You know, in terms of like keeping track of the enemy types, and what their, you know, different affinities are going to be, or like what their categorizations are. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to keep all that stuff listed out and like planned, and like how many of this type are going to be there, and how many of this type, and what are their weaknesses, and is there going to be a variant of this enemy type, and you know, how many of these types of variants should be in the game, and like this variant is for which mechanic. So it is that part. And then of course some of our, you know, we have our larger design docs that are just kind of like having the more detailed idea of, you know, how these mechanics work together, and outlining some of the more specifics of like this, you know, rock, paper, scissors, right? This works for here, this works for here, this works for here, right? And so there's some, you know, maybe add some visual element to have that idealized, right? And it's just now we're just testing it and seeing how if these ideas work out, and adding more to it or taking things away, that kind of stuff. But in the course of a long, you know, timeline, production schedule that has all these mechanics at play, like, yeah, like spreadsheets are like a key aspect of like keeping all of it understood and, you know, knowing what to cut, what to keep, right, you know, what things are going to work together and what things, you know, are not, kind of stuff.
Spreadsheets.
I'm trying to think of how big this spreadsheet might be. How many rows are we talking about?
How many rows? That's a good question. There's rows and tabs, right?
Right. So,
and some of the tabs communicate with each other type stuff as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's too big a question, how many rows.
I know.
I'll never be able to answer.
How many rows must a game designer walk down?
Oh man, yeah.
Well, Steven, you wanted to ask about, as you put it in the notes here, the numbers behind combat.
Yeah, well, I also wanted to reframe it a little bit more. Like, I was curious what specific aspects of combat design do you feel like make things feel better or more interesting or more good? And I mean, specifically asking about like the numbers behind the combat, the reason why you have all those spreadsheets, right, is because you need to know that this punch does 35 damage or whatever it is. And so I guess I'm curious, like, how you first approach like designing combat that is engaging and interesting. And what specifically, what aspect of it do you approach first? Is it the numbers? Because it's the numbers for me.
I feel like you're asking whether there's like a golden ratio for combat design, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, kind of.
Is there actually, like, a feel, you know, is like an 80-20 rule for some of this math behind it?
Yeah.
Golden ratio. So Steven likes numbers. That's what I'm hearing.
I do like numbers.
Did that come across?
You can't start with numbers, but boy, I wish you could.
That's real. Yeah, numbers definitely comes later for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think generally speaking, like you know, we're talking about like prototype stage, right? Mm-hmm. Like making something that feels good initially, that you can like expand on it. And it's like, okay, this is it, right? Like, right. Let's keep pushing in this direction or whatever. That's where things start, right? And so, you know, the key parts usually kind of boil down to, you know, the power fantasy of like capturing the feeling that you want is the first part. And that's going to be realized through the character animation, as well as like what the inputs are going to be for executing the said thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're like, okay, like you're trying to figure out what's a good as we call it, like flow for the button presses, right? Mm-hmm. You know, square, Y square, or something like that. I mixed those two up.
Be really good at games, but if you could do that.
Yeah. Square, triangle.
Right.
The button flow of like the button inputs and the timings of those inputs is a key part of like, oh, like this feels good or this feels responsive, right? Okay. So it was like, you know, those kinds of things, like what mechanics are that we're playing with. And then the animations is the next key part, right? Because you kind of want a good dynamic between, as before, like that relationship. So, you know, if I dodge, the dodge should feel like it's timed properly with the animation of the enemy, right? Of like when they miss, right? And vice versa, when I, you know, swing my sword, that like the enemy should react, right? So just like animation of reaction. So we have to put in all these smaller animations to make sure like that relationship is being communicated, and the hits are being felt, right? So that's like a key part of like, this is like feel good and this is fun. It's like, is this impactful? You know, then we add like the smaller layers of juicy feel to it after that. But like the key part is like those animations and the hit reactions, the responses to the players react, the players' things that they decide to do are key parts. And then the VFX. VFX are huge. That also gets into like hit reaction. And, you know, like the relationship, because you need to communicate that, you know, yeah, you have the animation, right? But it's like, but if you want it to really be felt, right, you want to really communicate like the weight of something, you know, then yes, it's the animation of the player. Yes, it's the reaction of the character that they get flung back. And yes, it's like the VFX that happens when they make impact or when they hit the ground. And it's like, oh, okay, like I feel it. And then, you know, from that point, we can start to get into camera stuff, and then we can start to get into hit points and, you know, what the different attributes of the values are going to be for each of the types of characters and each of the type of weapons and each move, you know, and then we can start to get into that nitty gritty. But the key part is going to be that visual element. What am I seeing? What am I feeling?
Right.
You know, when I press this button, you know, and That takes a while to get like good too for a minute, but once that's good, then you know, then you can start adding all the other bells and whistles into it and getting that stuff. But that's key.
Yeah.
Then you can get to the math.
Yeah, it sounds like unfortunately, Stephen, the numbers may not have much to do with it.
I know. Honestly,
not early. We will call Stephen in later. And say, all right, now we're ready for you.
Yeah. Well, I think it illustrates, and let me know if I'm reading this right, that like that sort of precision balance that like the numbers are and represent, right? Not it's other tools do that as well.
Yeah.
That is essentially that's a polished stage, that's a finalizing stage, but it is not necessarily, you can kind of get that wrong maybe and still make it feel right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry, Steven.
No, it's okay. It's honestly, I feel the frustration a lot when at work, because like I'll come up with a thing and I'm like, this system really makes a lot of sense. And part of it is like, I'm the one who knows how the system works and the people who are playing it don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what the feel helps you with, is it tells you that you're doing something right or you're doing something wrong. But I'll like develop this whole system, and like I don't tend to prioritize a lot of the visuals. Because it's honestly, it's just not something I'm very driven about. And so I do all that. And then when I get someone to play it, they're like, I can see something there, but it's like not quite there. And it feels wrong or something like that. I'm like, of course it feels wrong. I didn't add any visuals. There's no sounds.
But pretend there is.
Yeah.
Sounds.
And you can't reasonably ask somebody to just pretend that, because like visuals make a significant impact, and they definitely change. Yeah. how a person experiences a thing.
Yeah.
But my my personal skill set is the numbers and the things behind the visuals.
Yeah.
Which is why it's frustrating when like you're doing all that, you spend like months working on this thing, then you add art and everybody loves it, and beforehand nobody cared.
Well, you
accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, Tim, you identified it really early. You said when you make the prototype, one of the things you focus on is how it looks.
Right.
And it's like, that's not something people hear very often.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, Stephen, like I would venture that those final pieces, that balance, like it's not the foundation stone
right.
of the success, but there is a difference between something that works and something that sings.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
It does make a difference.
Yeah, it does make a difference.
One of the things that I think is fascinating, and this is just actually just in general, I think it's fascinating about game design and game playing in general, it's that, you know, we're putting a lot of thought and time and iteration into these systems and into the user experience and the visuals and the animations and the timing and then even the button press. Like, I had this vision of you sitting there with a controller going, square, square, triangle, square? Does that feel good? And it's like just thinking about the buttons. Like, and so there's all this thought that goes into this explicit design for these systems. And the player experiences it like almost entirely intuitively.
Yeah.
At first. Yes, you might get players like my husband who really get down into the mechanics of it and look at the numbers and try to figure out what the optimal point in the game is for the axe versus the sphere and whatever. Right. But there are many players as well who never get to that level of detail. They learn the gameplay intuitively as the game, helps them, instructs them, whether that's explicit instruction or implicit instruction. And that's where they live. And it works just fine. Mm-hmm. And it's just so interesting to, to be part of a team to create these very explicit systems that are so finely tuned, both in terms of the mechanics and the numbers, and then have somebody just be like, yeah, it feels good.
Yeah.
I'll keep playing it.
Yeah.
It's the kind of information that we want to give to the user. Because we talk a lot on this show and a lot of other people talk about it as well, the idea that you want to communicate to your player how your game works.
Right.
But I think people might sometimes take that they need to know how your game is built.
Mm.
When it doesn't matter. Like, you don't need to know how the bridge was constructed to walk across it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah. But you do need to at least know which lane to be in to not get hit by oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. But the balance of that, because there are players, a lot of players who are like your husband and at least on the path to being that interested in that part of it.
The dark path.
Yeah. So you also don't necessarily want to hide how it works. So, I mean, that's the question for you then, Tim, is like, what's the priority? When is it highly variable project to project, or is it just a little variable from project to project?
Priority between what the player is experiencing versus
The ability to understand and feel versus or in complement to the ability to optimize, maximize, achieve as a player, which comes often from knowing a little bit more about how the sausage is made.
I see. Yeah. That's a good question. I guess before I lose this thought, Stephen, other part that numbers come into play is animation. There is that.
That's true.
Animation is a lot of
if you need something to get interested
boxes and sizes and all that kind of stuff are very numbers heavy. That's an area.
Okay, cool.
I hadn't thought of that, but Stephen, you would be a good animator.
What? Really?
Yeah. I think that your natural obsession with numbers and spreadsheets would actually work. I mean, having worked in fields of animation where it is mostly numbers, it never occurred to me that there's a connection.
Huh.
But yeah, you should maybe take a peek one day.
A life raft.
It's a good thing I work at Future Club. Like, they're all animators.
A life raft of digits.
Homework.
Yeah. Dang, now I got homework. Yeah. All right. No, that's great. Oh, that's good. That's good to know. I've never really considered that before. Mm-hmm. But back to Mark's question.
Yeah, there's a good question pending, I've heard.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. As far as like priority is from a design standpoint in particular, we definitely at least from my personal opinion, I guess, there's definitely a focus on the feel over everything else, and like making sure that like all of that is it's the most accessible thing, I guess you would say, for the player base to like and ensure that everybody that picks up the game, the controller, can have a good time and can learn the mechanics and can start to like get good at it, right? And so that's like the priority is like, you know, everything that facilitates that experience over everything else. The min-max stuff and the other nitty-gritty, that's for like another subsection of players, right? That's just like, yeah, okay, like we know that y'all are playing our game. We know that like we're also making a game for high-skill players that have played a lot of these games. And, you know, like we have to make sure that we can support y'all to do really cool stuff and to do the things that you want to do with these mechanics. And so it's like, yeah, we got to build those things in, but that definitely is like secondary to the other part, you know? And it's a key thing too, especially for a game that is like a long running thing, like a Diablo or Mazan or whatever, like these kinds of things where it's like, yeah, like players, everyone that sticks around after that 40-hour mark, is that usually you know, so it's like, okay, like we got to make sure that this stuff is, you know, understood, and the menus and the UI stuff and the mechanics are like able to be added to and, you know, crunched in a way that makes sense and is like fair over time and has good progression over time. And, you know, that's not my expertise, but like, you know, we have people that we work with on our team that like they focus on that stuff and they care about that stuff deeply. And so it was like, okay, like, yes, like come into the room. Let's talk about how we're going to do this. Right. Yeah. So, yeah.
Hello, listener. This is Ellen. I am not going to scream glom in your ear. Actually, today I'm just going to talk about the feedback form a little bit. Definitely heard us talk about it before if you've listened to the show. You can get there by going to nicegames.club/feedback, and this feedback form will take only about 5 minutes. We ask questions like, what thoughts and suggestions do you have for the show? Do you want us to have more of your favorite episode type, whether that's roundtables or interviews or jams or specials, etc.? You might have some suggestions on the mix of episode types that we have. Well, we ask about that too. And there are a couple more questions, including tell Steven that he's wrong. Be specific. So if you've got 5 minutes and you've been thinking about ways we might be able to make the show better for your particular interests, this is a way you can give us that info anonymously if you'd like. So go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell us what you think. Thanks.
I want to talk a little bit about like juice, because that's an aspect of it, right? Juice. I don't remember who coined the term. I think it's like
it feels like it's something that everyone should know what it means, but it also feels like slang.
Yes,
that not everyone knows.
Right. But it basically like the extra bits that you add to an action to make it look and feel satisfying, because. Mm-hmm. I mean, you said it, like you focus a lot on the visuals and stuff right away so that it feels good. But like there's still more there you have to add in order to make it feel final. I guess how you go about adding juice to a thing.
Well, where do you find the opportunities?
Right.
How do you like triage what's worth spending time on? Because all of it is extra.
Yes.
Right. I mean, to a maybe on a budget.
yeah.
Not in a designer's heart, but
right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all of us don't have like, I don't know, like crazy money, and I don't know how they pull it off with their crazy animation team, like the Oyoverse and ZZZ and all that stuff where they can pretty much add it to everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous, to be honest. Animation is like a key part of that, for sure. Like when you have a 3D action game in particular, 2D stuff and other action games, you can kind of get away with not having as much animation, you know, like polish, I guess, to the same degree. It really depends on like the tier of the game as far as like where you want to like, spend your time and or where you're like good at, right? Obviously, like animation wise, you can add a lot of stuff into a character and make them feel really good when you use them and kind of like, you know, have that be a key part of communicating that polish and like these moments, right? But when you don't have it as much, you know, then it kind of comes down to, as Steven alluded to, like the VFX stuff is key of like adding that extra oomph to make something feel good. Like the stuff we do in Prototype is just like to get the idea down, right?
Right,
but then it's like, yeah, how do you level it up, right? How do you, you know, add? And the key part is like, where we add it to is what's going to be shown, what the player's going to be doing the most, right? That's going to be the priority. So in an action game in particular, it's like, yeah, obviously the hits, obviously the reacts, obviously, you know, the anticipations from the enemies and these like small moments, obviously the little VFX that happen on the screen if you want to figure out an interesting way to do the UI or like how the elementals affect the player screen. You know, these are all these small little things that like they'll add to the experience. And then one of the key parts, you can call it use this polish, right? But like the camera is really important.
Okay. Oh.
Some folks don't always look at the camera as like a you know, but for any action game,
yeah.
One of the things that you don't see or so until it's messed up is like going to be the camera work. You know, obviously it's, you know, obviously the player controls their camera and people complain, oh, this is a bad camera, right? Because like it's not doing what they want them to do. But and that's one part of it as far as like, is the camera responsive, but is the camera actually adding to the experience?
Yeah,
that's the other part.
Interesting.
Right.
That's definitely a whole aspect of combat design I don't consider a lot of, because I feel like oftentimes when I'm imagining it, I'm feeling like the game kind of controls it and frames that most of the combat you need to see in a way that I don't really need to think about it. But I guess maybe that's the ideal, but like that can't always be the case. So that's definitely an aspect of the system that I don't even recognize or even remember recognizing in a game, unless it was a problem. Right.
Yeah, it's one of those purely intuitive things that's kind of invisible until it's not, you know, like a door handle being the wrong orientation.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think about door handles until something makes you think about it. And if that's the case, then something went wrong.
Right.
But I like what you're saying, Tim, about like, okay, let's not just make don't break it as our measure of quality. How can we go beyond that and say, how do we make this door handle nice?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a key part. I've done a lot of study on cameras over the years just because of like, okay, action games, like, you know, a key part actually is a whole camera system that supports, you know, what you're trying to do and supports highlighting the interesting things or highlighting moments. You know, as I mentioned, ZZZ, like they have great camera work. Like it's, you notice it all the time, but sometimes you do notice it and it's like, oh, what, you know, and it's like, really feels really cool.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and that's a key part. And to make it feel cool, but also like make it feel like you still have control over the camera and can do what you want to do, is an element of things. Right. So a camera system is like kind of key to having like really good, strong 3D combat in particular, specifically. And then, you know, other stuff you can kind of get away with not using it as much. But if you wanted things to like really polish and highlight things and make stuff kind of have like special moments for any action game, having some camera work that can really take things to the next level is like key part.
I'm never going to look at game like combat game cameras the same way. I'm going to just like get in there and be like, and just lose instantly because I'm going to be distracted by all the craft of it.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, you know, like anything else in games, it's about like subtle hints and guides without necessarily telling the player everything because that's too linear and not interactive.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's why you don't notice it.
I know, it's so cool. Making games is so cool, you guys.
It truly is.
We should do it.
We should do it.
You should keep doing it.
Yeah. Well, another aspect of combat design that I think players feel, but they don't necessarily know what exactly is going on, is like the pace of combat. I think that like a lot of times people will describe like Monster Hunter as a lot of action is intense, but it's kind of slow in that like a lot of your animations, a lot of your actions, a lot of the monsters you're fighting are also slow and plotting. And so like you have to put all of that into consideration. But like despite all of that, Monster Hunter still feels good. And I don't think people would describe Monster Hunter as feeling snappy, but it definitely feels good when you're playing it. Mm. But like there are other games like Hades, for instance, where like everything definitely feels very snappy. And like when you do something, it's immediate. And when the enemy does something, there's a little bit of a wind up, but you can tell that they're about to do something and it's near immediate too. So can you describe how you approach like pacing a different combat and how you what tools you use to make something feel slower and faster and why you decide to do that?
Yeah, I think the examples you pointed to are like perfect examples. Mm-hmm. The other one is like Souls likes,
yeah,
or the Dark Souls likes, right? Like they're a key certain type of experience that they craft, right? For
right.
how you move in the space. And yeah, I mean, there's a couple areas of pacing that could, you know, be talked about, and I guess in this context of like particularly like in the moment to moment, right?
Yeah.
Of like your character and what you're doing. Animation is the driver.
Okay.
You know, the timing, and I think, you know, Monster Hunter and Dark Souls, all the Souls like type style of games are like this, right? The timing between your button press and the responsive movement of the character, and when the actual weapon comes out and hits something. Mm-hmm. Right, that delay in that animation movement, you know, it's either like really it's like slow, right? And
right.
then kind of has weight to it, so it's like, yeah, you press the button, but the hit doesn't happen until like a half a second later,
right?
You know, instead of like the hit happening like a couple milliseconds later, like almost immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, like in a lot of Hades games.
Yeah.
In the Hades games, or you know, other stuff like that. So it's like that's a key part of that feel of, you know, making it feel like it's, you know, responsive, but actually like in a particular way that is responsive. You know, Monster Hunter works because everything feels weighty.
Yeah, yeah,
all your weapons. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, and the characters, the enemies are kind of the same, mm-hmm. right? Of like, it's about timing of, you know, oh, I'm running and this big character is going to show up and I need to time my dodge with enough time. And I need to hit, you know, use as many attacks as I can and get out the way before they do this thing. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a slower pace, right? Versus Hades, which is like, you know, boom, boom, boom. They move, boom, 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 move. Like it's like quick,
right?
You know, and the animation is a key part. And that animation ideal or the high level goal kind of drives the whole game as far as like how is this supposed to feel in mm-hmm. general, mm-hmm. how snappy is it supposed to feel in general, and then you know you start to build out your movesets and your characters, you know, and all those animations based upon those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So that's the main driver from my perspective that I've seen from that. Something that we don't have to discuss, but the other piece that I focused that have spent a lot of time on is like pacing of the overall level.
Yeah,
or
yeah. I wanted to ask about that
game.
Yeah.
That's the
yeah.
other part of it, which is different, right? Because you're not talking about the character anymore. Now you're talking about the other things that happen, the other combat moments that happen, right? And that's a little different. But I've spent time with both, I guess, actually. I've done the character stuff with bosses and how quickly they should respond and how quickly their move should be. And then I've done a lot of pacing stuff of like in a level, how many combat encounters should happen, how spaced out should they be, mm-hmm. Which moment should happen when, and like, if should it be, should it be a low point or should it be a high point in this middle area? Should it be a new enemy that should show up at this point in the game or in this point in the level, or should a variant show up at this point in the level, right? And then if there's a boss fight in the, you know, like, okay, like at what point did we get to the boss and then we cut stuff off, or did we add a boss in? You know, I like to use like pacing curves as like an example of like what is the pace of the experience over the course of the level.
Yeah.
In terms of like when combat happens, what type of combat should happen, you know, tense it should be when it does happen. And then you want a good curve that kind of, you know, can take the player up and bring them down and give them a low point and then give them another high point, you know, later. And then what happens when it gets low? Are there other, the other things that they should be doing, other mechanics, other puzzles that they should be doing, exploration stuff, you know, those kinds of things. We want to trickle in a few creatures later, just as it ramps up, just to have something happening, right? Yeah. Because it is a combat-focused game, so you want some little sprinkles of combat. You don't want too much time to go between you do something, right? Mm. Those kinds of, those are the kind of questions. It's like, what does it make sense for our game? You know, Dark Souls is like, when should we put in a character hiding behind a door?
Yeah.
Should it be in this part, you know, in this part of the level? Oh, okay, when do we expect the player to get here? You know, those kinds of questions. Mm. Yeah, so it's kind of about that.
Yeah, I think the biggest question I have, because there's, it's an art to it, right? You sometimes, right, you want to start high and bring down. Sometimes you want to ramp up slowly or an exponential curve. There's no real right answer to that. Mm-hmm. But I'm mm-hmm. thinking about like the units of measure. So you have like the pacing for a level, or the pacing for an encounter, or a pacing for a section of a level, or the pacing of the game. And especially when you're working on a team with, where a lot of people have a hand in a lot of those things, you may decide high level, this is a chill level, right? We're, this one's just going to have,
yeah,
there's lots of exploration, and then we're not going to have a ton of enemy counters, and there's no boss battle. So that's what we're doing. And then as you design the level, thinking of the unit, the level, you find that actually it would be a really intense, quick pace here would be incredible for this level, but uh-oh, it's no longer the level we wanted it to be. Does that happen a lot? Is it something you can avoid with good planning, or is it something you kind of hope for because it can give character and shape to the game as you make it?
Yeah, planning is definitely an important part of that, right? Because it is like macro to micro kind of thing. So when it comes to that, it does kind of come to, from the micro point, as you mentioned, like this level is supposed to be less, more chill, right? Because it's at a, maybe it's a story beat that's like, yeah, there's not anything intense happening at this point in the story, right? Or it's before something that's kind of be more intense later, in the next chapter even, right? Kind of stuff. So it's like, okay, we're going to save that intense stuff for later. And so, yeah, in the context of like that an individual level experience, it's like, yeah, okay, like we still want to keep some form of surprise or some form of, you know, interest. So the players, like, you know, are not just going through the motions, you know, right, what I'm saying, right, the whole time, right? So I think if it's already, if the level already has a goal to hit a certain point, hit a certain, like, you know, max intensity, right, so to speak, generally speaking, obviously the game will sometimes tell you what it needs or what it doesn't want to do. And so you may have to pivot, but generally speaking, you just try to like, yeah, I'll try to hit that, right? I'll try to keep it below that point. And after playing through it and, you know, however long the level is supposed to be, right, how much time you're supposed to spend in it, right, then it's like, okay, actually, we do need something. We need something to spice it up, right? And the question is what, you know? Then, you know, there's ways sometimes where it doesn't have to be more intense, right? But it can be more creative, as far as like adding in a different type of scenario. If you have some space for it, or if you have the right tools, you can, you know, oh, I can combine these two characters together, and the player hasn't seen that done before. And it's not a more intense scenario. Yeah. It's just like different and challenging. Mm-hmm. You know, or I can, you know, add, you know, this elemental hazard in this section with these characters now, and that will like kind of spice things up, right? So it is like, you know, whatever your high level goals of that area is going to be, it's like, okay, can we just hit that and find interesting ways to do it?
Yeah.
And of course, after playing through the game, and the game's like, yeah, well, let's do something more, right? Let's punch it up, right? It's like, okay, like we'll add a little something extra here and like ramp up the intensity here because like it might fit, but you know, it really is subjective, right? In that way, so we try not to. backpedal too much in terms of like, here's what we're going to try to do, just set this space, right? But you know, after playtesting, you know, playtesting is king.
Right.
So after playtesting, it's like, oh, if we need something, it's like, okay, let's figure something out, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
I really like, that's a great answer. I love just like, yeah, contextualizing those extra ways to provide what you might normally just throw in more enemies to make it more intense. Mm-hmm. You develop the sort of all those extra ways to increase the feel in a way that it doesn't invalidate the sort of goal of the pacing that you've established.
Right.
That's really good.
A lot of changes happen in development you know, every level goes through so many iterations over time. And the first thing you start with on paper, as far as like, oh, here's what you're thinking, and then as you put it together, as you build it, as you like walk through it, it's like, oh, we need more stuff, or this doesn't work, you know, and so many changes that happen, so we have to be flexible. But you know, as long as we have our high level goals, like it's what we're trying to hit, then we can, you know, have that creative space to, you know, try things out.
Yeah, I imagine you're most of the time in it. So you have to rely on your own feel, right? Does this process, this outcome feel good in a way that's not too dissimilar to the player's experience? But there's probably not a lot of like going back and, you know, like checking to see exactly is it the correct. It's like, yep, this feels right. Play test's good. And then you look back, oh, it wasn't exactly what we wanted, but it's what we wanted. So
yeah, I mean, it's a constant thing of like, it's like, actually, is this right? Is this too hard? Mm-mm. Like, someone else play, you know, let me get a couple people to play this. Let me know what's going on, you know.
So you can find, like I mentioned, the various resources that we discussed and links to Melanated Game Kitchen and Tim's other projects online. We will put some in the show notes. You can specifically find Melanated Game Kitchen on Itch. That's melanatedgamekitchen.itch.io. And again, we will add more notes in the show notes website. Go to nicegames.club to get all that good stuff. You can also visit us on Threads at Nice Games Club, where Dale posts about game dev resources and the Riffmaster. Reply there on Threads or email us, contact@nicegames.club. Nice Games Club is on Patreon. Support the show and get stuff, including ad-free episodes. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub. And if you want to keep things more casual, just stop by nicegames.club/discord and say hello.
So, until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
Now I'm sitting here thinking about animation. You're doing this, sorry.
He didn't pay attention to any of what you just said.
I listened mostly.